when we deploy applications into the cloud, and we think about how we want to deploy these, more importantly, we think about where we want to deploy these. We basically end up with three different options when it comes to Windows Azure. We go to virtual machines, cloud services, websites, and actually, as we go through this particular workshop, you'll actually hear from Bruce more details about virtual machines. You'll hear from Tyler more details about cloud services. You'll then hear more details about websites, also from Tyler. And then to finish it off, Bruce is actually going to come back and talk about how we make all of these work together. And that's actually the beauty of it, because you don't actually have to choose one or the other. You have a mixture of both, or all three if you wanted to, whatever makes the most sense for your solution, but also what makes most sense from a cost perspective. So just as an overview, let's look at virtual machines. In this case, we're talking about either Windows servers or Linux servers, which again is relatively new to the platform, because before Windows was the only option that you ever had. So now you can choose either or both, depending on what you need. And when we think about virtual machines, we actually really think about taking existing applications or existing servers or existing infrastructure, taking it as you have it today, and bringing that over to Windows Azure. Now, if you're already running in a virtualized environment, that actually becomes a lot easier to do, because you can actually bring your VHDs, take them from your on-premises Hyper-V servers, upload those to Windows Azure, and you're good to go. If you're not running Hyper-V today, you can actually provision brand new virtual machines in Windows Azure, so you don't have to upload anything, build it out from there, and then eventually transition all of your applications from there. It's up to you. When we talk about cloud services, actually, sorry, we're going to talk about websites first. Websites is actually the other side of the spectrum, where everything is already ready for you to go. You just go in and through the wizard, and you'll see Tyler doing a demo for this. You're going to go through the wizard. You're going to provision your website. Within a couple of seconds, everything is up and running. And then you go and you just upload your website or your web service, whatever it happens to be. So there's actually no infrastructure at all that you have to worry about there, because it's all taken care of for you. You can deploy in various different ways. Some of you will prefer FTP, some will prefer web deploy, Git, TFS, whatever it is, available for you. So that's not a problem. Now, when we look at ultimately in the middle, which is platform as a service, and we're thinking cloud services now, this is where we're thinking, okay, we don't want to necessarily manage everything in the virtual machine, but at the same time, we want to be able to control some of our environment. And so we don't want to go to websites, because effectively, websites, you're just deploying your applications. You can tweak a couple of settings here and there, but you don't have that level of control. Cloud services comes in and is actually sort of like the happy medium, where you have most of the control that you need, but at the same time, you don't have to worry about the complexities of a virtual machine. I do this because ultimately you're going to pick and choose which parts of your solution make sense for each one. And as I mentioned before, you can actually pick one of these or multiple of these for each part of your solution, and you can just make that work. The nice part about cloud services, though, is that once you kind of get your application into this mode, you now are able to start using many of Windows Azure features that you couldn't with the other two. For example, scaling becomes a lot easier. Disaster recovery becomes a lot easier. And again, I won't steal Tyler's thunder, because he's going to go into this for you. But just know that ultimately, from a strategic application perspective, websites is one way to go if you want to keep things nice and simple. But as you build out actual modern web applications, you're probably going to start needing a little bit more than that. Virtual machines is probably a good ramp into getting into the cloud, but ultimately, as you start tweaking different things here and there, then ultimately you're going to get yourself into a cloud services world and then go from there. So you'll play with it, you'll see what makes sense for your solution, and certainly the last session of today, I'll compare and contrast a whole bunch of these for you so that you really get a clearer idea of where you stand with that. This is just giving an example here of how cloud services actually works, where if you notice, as this is building up, I'm actually just deploying my application, my code, but my code actually has the definition of the infrastructure that I need. And as Windows Azure is reading the definition of that infrastructure. It's actually going in and it's building out that infrastructure for me. It's actually configuring all of the racks and the virtual machines behind my application. It then goes and deploys my code into those machines. Again, if you're doing one machine or you're doing four machines, doesn't matter. The beauty of it is I hear you're actually saying, hey, I need X many machines, and it's going to go ahead and deploy those X many machines and then deploy your solution to those machines. Once all of that's done and it knows all of the various machine names, IP addresses, so on and so forth, it's going to then take care of all those networking pieces for you. So you actually see in this world, in the cloud services world, all of that is kind of just, I don't want to say it happens automagically, because we can actually spend hours going through literally every step of how this happens. But the point is, for you as a developer or as a software architect, you're just basically defining your infrastructure as part of that definition. And then you're letting Windows Azure decide how you want to do that, or how it wants to do that, where it wants to put everything, and assign all of those resources on its own. Okay? So it actually makes things nice and simple, especially when things start going down. And ultimately, everything in the technology world will at some point have some sort of downtime or failure or whatever. But in a cloud services world, because Windows Azure knows exactly what your application needs from its infrastructure perspective, it can actually take care of bringing up another machine for you, getting your code on there, putting that back into the network load balancer, and then for all intents and purposes, your users have no clue that anything happened. More importantly, if you don't want to know that anything happened, you don't have to either. You're not going to get some sort of email that says, by the way, something went down. You're not going to get any text messages to your phone. Nothing. The point is, as part of that defined SLA that I was talking about earlier, the beauty of that is that you have resources there taking care of things for you. Okay? So ultimately, think about it, even though you may not be able to do that today, from a strategic perspective of your application, ultimately, whether you're starting off as infrastructure as a service or you're starting off as a website, eventually you'll probably want to merge in the middle there with cloud services. Having said that, and Bruce will go into this in a little bit more detail as well, there's nothing that says that you have to go to cloud services. And more importantly, some applications actually might not be able to. He'll go into that more in detail. Now, when we're talking about the platform as a whole, though, the virtual machines, the cloud services, and the websites were your options for deploying. Now, that's, of course, only half the story, because the other half is all of these other additional pieces of the puzzle that you need in order to make your applications actually run seamlessly. Usually, your first requirement that you get into is, okay, well, where do I put my data? Now, even there's a whole bunch of different options. You can use SQL databases, or you can use Windows Azure Tables. But, again, if we're thinking about what do I need to know in order to bring my applications into this world? Or more importantly, what do I need to know to get started right away? Because let's say you may not know table storage yet. Well, SQL databases is the easiest way to get in. Reason for that, works the exact same way as SQL databases in a SQL server on premises. Right? You have the relational SQL capabilities. Granted, there are a couple of things that don't work. File stream, for example, is one of those. But there are workarounds to do that, but you're able to get the value, if you will, the value of a cloud-based platform by simply moving your database here, and now all the management, the scaling, all that's taken care of for you. Now, if you need additional control, now notice I say need and not want, because there's a difference. Everyone might want all that control, but do you actually need all that control? If you're able to say, yeah, you know what, I don't want to manage a SQL server, then this one's for you. There is, effectively, this is SQL Server as a Service, or Windows Azure SQL Databases. But the other option is you can, in fact, have a SQL Server running in a Windows Azure virtual machine. Of course, that's going to give you all the control, but with all the control comes the knowledge that you need to operate a server. Again, you're going to pick and choose which one works best for you. The point I'm trying to make here is that if you don't want to get into that, then you do have this capability within the platform to effectively just subscribe to a database. You procure it on a server, or you provision it on a server, and then you just start using it. If you're using it through SQL Management Studio, you're using it through Visual Studio, or even the portal. It's right there available for you, and you don't have to worry about servers or anything like that. Now, on the other side, too, is that most applications these days need to store some sort of data. In this case, you have what's called blob storage. And blob storage is effectively a gigantic hard drive that's just going to continue to add more and more space as you need it. Now, keep in mind, you are paying per gig per month, but you're not going to run into that kind of situation where you say, well, if I only procured 250 gigs for my server, let's say, at one point you're going to run out of those. Here, you take your data, you keep uploading it, and it'll continue to grow. More importantly, as your users are using that data, what Windows Azure will do is actually scale that in and out for you so that that experience for the users is never constrained regardless of what's going on, right? So if for whatever reason the one file you have or a picture or whatever it is really getting all of that traffic, not a problem. Windows Azure will actually take care of that for you to make sure that for your user, they're not going to notice what's happening in the background. They're not going to notice any slowdowns. The nice thing about blob storage as well, remember I talked about before about that global experience, is that what Windows Azure will do in the background for you is make sure that it actually has you in multiple data centers. And what that does is make sure that, if let's say in the unlikely event something were to happen in one of the data centers, again, your users don't know anything because you have the replication into another data center and you're back up and running. But putting your files in blob storage, you can actually also enable another feature called the Content Delivery Network. And that actually now enables 26 different nodes around the world to hold your data. And when users are connecting throughout the world, it doesn't matter where, they're actually automatically going to be routed to the nearest one of these nodes and be able to get your data from there, which means they're going to get the speeds that you're looking for. They're not having to connect, let's say, to the other side of the world because that's where you happen to have put your files originally, right? So that's the beauty of having this as opposed to the way that we used to do data, which is effectively you would save something to a local machine, right? Now you don't have to do that anymore. You have that capability plus more. And then, of course, in the world of modern applications means or implies almost that things are speedy. And we know from traditional development, speedy usually involves a cache. And if you've ever tried to put together a cache or a cache infrastructure, it's not for the faint of heart. But again, here you can actually utilize almost like cache as a service where you can actually just put your data into infrastructure that's already provisioned and you're just using it for what you need, making the calls back and forth. And you're just at the end of the day making those calls to REST-based services on the other end, on the Windows Azure end, that are there and waiting for your data to come in. As you need more demand or juice, if you will, for your cache, that infrastructure will continue to grow to make sure that your application has what it needs. So you don't have to worry about trying to put that up yourself. You could do that with one of these application building blocks. Now, the nice thing, too, and this is also relatively new, is all the protocols that it supports, specifically Memcached, right? And that's something that's been around for a while, but now you have the ability to do that within Windows Azure as well. It used to be that you only had the option of subscribing to this cache service. But now with the new Windows Azure, effectively all these new features that came out at the beginning of June, you can actually use your infrastructure to do multiple roles. So it could have your application and basically service up your application, but at the same time, it can also act as a cache. And the way that that works is you actually take bits and pieces of that infrastructure. You assign it, let's say in the example that I have here, it's 300 megs worth of each one of those virtual machines. And now all of a sudden, I have the cache in here, combines it all together, and now I have 1.2 gigs of cache across all of my virtual machines. Or, sorry, in this case, all of my instances of cloud services. And that's actually one of the reasons why I was saying before that you want to start thinking in terms of cloud services, because once you're in that world, this becomes available to you. In the website world, you're not going to have this. Now, the nice thing, too, is that as your application continues to grow, remember I said beforehand, you don't have to do all that thinking of, well, do I need to buy everything ahead of time? Let's say you do, in fact, get to that point where you need all of that additional cash. Nice thing is that you can actually then provision specific cache infrastructure that, again, Azure will manage for you. And now all of a sudden, your limits in terms of how much cache you can have in your applications have grown by that much. In this case, I have two worker roles that each have a 12 gig cache, and all of a sudden, now I have a 24 gig distributed cache. So you can kind of see the theme that I'm getting at is that you pick and choose all of these different application blocks, and by all means, you don't have to do them all at the beginning. In fact, you shouldn't. Start moving bits and pieces, or if you're building a brand new application, you can actually just start using them as you please, or use them all at the same time. But get used to this stuff. There's a lot of it there so that you can fine-tune each part of your application to get to that scalable model, to get to that world where you don't actually care what device is connecting. You're not worried about requirements and constraints on a device, for example. Right? Just things to keep in mind as you look at cache. And then as your application grows, this will grow with you as well in that you just continue to scale out the various different parts of your infrastructure. Makes things nice and simple to get started. Now, the next part of this is usually something that we're constantly doing is dealing with identity. Now, identity can be in terms of just regular authentication, or maybe you have requirements to use an Active Directory, or you're building a consumer-based application and your users are going to want to use Facebook or Yahoo, different providers like that. You actually have an API built into the platform that you can use called the Access Control Service, where it gives you all of these functionalities, but focuses on the configuration, not so much on the building of the infrastructure. So you can easily bind your Active Directory, let's say you're in an organization that has Active Directory, you can bind that through Federation Services to Access Control, and now you have single sign-on between applications that you have in the cloud and applications that you have on-premises. Or let's say you're building a phone application and you want users to use their Yahoo ID, right? You can do that as well. You don't have to connect directly to Yahoo. You actually use the Access Control Service and have that do all of the brokering for you. For your application, nice and simple. One API that you're talking to, and you're passing back and forth REST-based messages and tokens to do all of that for you. There's a whole bunch of additional benefits as well in terms of the security that's involved in it and all of the upkeep. So definitely something to dig into. Just wanted to make sure that you knew that it was there. And then last but not least, there's one more feature that starting to see a lot of usage for is a service bus. Now, if you've ever used a service bus before, then you know that it makes it really easy to connect applications that may or may not have anything to do with each other through effectively a bus, or you put these messages on and then it routes it to where it needs to go. But again, putting up that infrastructure, not the easiest thing to do, and certainly to maintain it is not the easiest thing to do either. In this particular case, same API calls that I was mentioning on the access control, you're kind of doing the same thing here. You're just using the one REST-based API, you're putting your messages on there, you have various different other endpoints that are also connecting into the service bus, they're listening in. If there is a message of a specific topic, then it goes out to everybody who's listening on that topic, and you're good to go. Right? You've been able to establish that connection between multiple applications using this infrastructure. Now, where it gets even better is when you're in a situation where you have an on-premises application that you want to connect into that's actually behind a firewall, and you want to connect it either into the cloud or you want to connect it to a device, let's say, but you still have that firewall in the middle. Service Bus does actually a really good job of helping you navigate through that without opening up firewall rules and whatnot to make sure that you can actually connect all of those applications. So that's that application block for you. And here's just an example of how that works. You see, I have the app behind the firewall and I have my device on the other end. I want to make sure that all of that connectivity is there. I'm using the service bus relay to do all of that for me. And it's the one that's connecting back and forth, not my actual device connecting directly into my application. Or even that application could actually even be a database if you wanted to. Okay? So those were just a couple of the primarily used, if you will, application blocks you see there. There's a whole bunch of other ones. Storage, we touched upon a bit. Caching, we talked about. CDN was that content delivery network with distributing all that data around the world. We talked about identity. Traffic Manager, again, to help you achieve that global presence and that routing to have that optimal experience. Long story short, you have all of these things there. You're using them as REST-based APIs that you're just calling from your application. You're not worrying about actually building the infrastructure to make all that happen. And then last but not least, and now this is happens to be my personal favorite, and brand new into the platform, it only came in at the end of August, but is this realization that, you know what, all of that might be too much for you right now. Let's say you're building a Windows 8 application, and certainly today that is the only SDK that's available, but soon we'll have SDKs for a whole bunch of other platforms. You want to wrap all of that functionality into a very simple and easy to use service. Now, when I say simple and easy to use, I don't want to say, well, I want to lose all of the gains that I get by using full out cloud services. So what you have with mobile services is actually in the middle, where you know your data, your database connectivity and storing and reading and writing, that's done for you. Your diagnostics is done for you. Your scaling is done for you in terms of giving you the ability to do that, and you could just go into the portal and scale up and down as you need. The point here being that you're getting access into this service that, I mean, when you see the code for this thing, and we're not going to focus it on this workshop, you'll be able to see it on demand from the virtual dev camp, but we're only talking about a couple of lines of code to actually get you your full-out cloud backend system without having to worry about connecting to each one of these things directly. So if you haven't tried out mobile services yet, definitely something to check out. Again, on-demand video will be available as soon as we are done the post-production on that one. But if you want to check it out right now, you go to windowsazure.com. Under the Develop tab, you'll actually see there's a mobile center there. It talks about all of what mobile services can do. And there's great videos on there on how to get started. And to be honest, try it yourself, but getting started is literally 10 minutes. With that, I do want to make sure that if you're thinking to yourself, well, do I only need to do .NET on this thing? What if I'm doing other languages? Not a problem. You have .NET, you have PHP, you have Java support, you have Python support, whole bunch of different platforms, and especially if you're going into the cloud services world or the virtual machine world, you can actually add additional platforms as you please. The only thing to keep in mind there is that you'll be supporting them, but Windows Azure support will in fact support you on .NET, Node.js, Java, PHP, Python. So you don't actually, if you're doing any one of those, you don't have to go and switching your code off just to use Windows Azure. The other thing too is that a lot of the SDKs, actually I shouldn't say a lot, all of the SDKs are open source. So the nice part is that if there's functionality that doesn't quite fit what you're trying to do, you can actually go into the GitHub repository of the SDKs, fork out your own version, make whatever tweaks you need to the SDK, and now you can actually get the functionality that you need. And hey, if it's a cool feature, you can tell us and maybe we'll fork it back in and make it part of the SDK. You can actually go to github.com/windowsazure if you actually want to see everything that's available in open source. And now, of course, I always get this question, so I'm going to make sure that you have the information that you need. What happens in terms of security and privacy? You're technically taking your data and you're giving it to someone else, or you're taking your applications and you're giving it to someone else. That tends to worry people. Not a problem. If you see that that link you have there on the screen, aka.ms/Azure Trust Center, you go there, all of our policies, procedures, certifications, anything and everything you possibly need to know about how your world exists within the Windows Azure world, it's all there. Now, lots of legalese, so it's probably best to give that to your legal folks or your lawyers or whoever needs that information, but just so that you know, it is there. And then the other one I'll point you to as well is aka.ms/getthefacts, where it's actually a full out several hours session where they're talking about different things like the Patriot Act and how that applies into this world. And a lot of people kind of ask, well, what happens because you don't have a Canadian data center? They cover all of that stuff in there. Rather than trying to answer the question here, because it's going to take some time, if you're interested in that stuff, check that out. It's worth watching, just so that you have all that information. And certainly anyone that asks you about that information, don't worry about trying to explain it. Just send them to get the facts, and they'll have everything that they need from there. So to wrap all of this functionality up, let's think about where we actually use Windows Azure, or where we can use Windows Azure. Websites, pretty much a given, right? So if you're building a website or a web application, you're going to give users access to it. Makes sense. You start off small today, you don't know where it's going to go, so you either stay small or you grow as you need. Okay? Compute-intensive apps, that one is more in terms of, hey, if you need to crunch numbers, or you need to do a whole bunch of batch stuff, or different things that need to be run simultaneously. You know, rather than being constrained to, let's say you only have access to two machines, you can have your algorithms run on however many machines. So think about that in terms of applications that you need that horsepower, then you can put on here as well. Device applications we talked about, so applications that you would put on a device like this, a tablet, or you would put it on a phone, basically any device that can access the internet as well, Blu-ray players, whatever it might be, then when you need additional functionality for your applications, then you can actually put that in Windows Azure as well. And in fact, the workshop that's coming up next week, the Building Connected Apps, we actually go into that in further detail in terms of how to actually merge the two together. How do you get devices to talk to the cloud? A lot of you may be building APIs. You may not be building websites. You may be building APIs that other developers are using. So that's a platform for you as well. And if you think about it from that perspective, it's actually even better, because you have the SLAs that you're worried about, but then you also have the SLAs that the developers consuming your APIs are promising their customers. So you want to make sure that your infrastructure is rock solid at that point, so that's actually not a problem for you. So you can use Windows Azure for hosting your web APIs. You don't have to worry about just doing websites. And then last but not least, a trend that is picking up very, very quickly is this idea of social games. And those are games that are tied to social networks, Facebook, Twitter, so many of them now. But basically, the idea is that you have a game as part of these networks, and things can go viral. You can grow crazy, right? So you want to make sure that you put that on somewhere that actually has the infrastructure to support you. More importantly, keep in mind, especially in the case of, let's say, Facebook and those guys, you're coming from their platform. Users of your application are going to expect the same sort of infrastructure from your application as they get from Facebook that brought them to there. So you sort of have to make sure that the infrastructure is relatively parallel. Certainly, you're not going to go out and buy data centers like Facebook has, right? This allows you to do that and not have to worry about it. And then last but not least, I want to make sure that of you guys that are out there that have MSDN, I don't know if you know this, because usually when I ask the questions, many people kind of say, yeah, I had no clue. Your MSDN subscription actually has Windows Azure benefits built into it so that you can try this stuff out, build applications, test it, do everything that you need right before going into production right through your MSDN subscription. So if you have an MSDN subscription, you haven't activated Windows Azure yet, log into your MSDN, go into the benefits access at the top there, and just turn it on. If you don't have MSDN, not a problem. There is the 90-day free trial, which hopefully you've signed up for one or the other so that you can actually do some of the hands-on labs that I've put in the bottom of the page for you. If you scroll down a little bit past the player, you'll actually see a whole bunch of labs that are relevant to what we're talking about today. I'm a firm believer that unless you try this stuff out, it's great that you're going to hear me talking and Bruce and Tyler and everybody talking about it. It makes so much more sense when you actually try it out yourself. So you have the labs on there. MSDN will give you access into the Azure resources. If you don't have MSDN, get the trial. And in fact, maybe if you don't have it while we're on break, go and do that so that you can actually start working on the labs while you're listening to some of the other sessions. So with that, we're going to take a little break, and we'll switch over here from just giving you the preview to specifically talking about cloud services. We'll be back in a bit, and we'll get going.